Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, hour number two of the show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. In this part of Focus 580, we have a health topic for you, something that we have done on and off over the years, and generally, I think, with the same guest. He's been good enough to come by at least once a year for a while now. Robert Bourne is his name. He's a podiatrist from Carl Clinic, and that means he specializes in dealing with the foot and the ankle.
True.
Nothing above that point.
No.
But that gives him plenty of work because, as we know, that at some time in their life, a lot of people have foot problems, and if your feet hurt, it can make it tough to think about anything else. So this is an opportunity here this morning to call in and talk about foot health issues. One thing I always say when we have a doctor here on the program is that you have to keep in mind that we can't diagnose over the phone. There's limitations as to what we can do because the doctor cannot see you. But I don't. Yeah, hold your foot up to the telephone. But I don't want to discourage anyone from calling. We can do some basic information here. If you have some questions, you're certainly welcome to call, talk with the doctor, and then you may well have to pursue it with somebody who can see you. But this is a place where you can start very easily by calling us, 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much for being here.
Nice to be back.
I'm guessing that if you look at the causes of foot problems, that there are some things that may be structural and may have to do with, in fact, just the kind of foot that you were born with, and
True.
That there are some things that have to do with lifestyle and maybe what you do for a living and how much time you spend on your feet mm-hmm. and what you wear on your feet and maybe how much you weigh and how much activity you get, all sorts of things. When you, if I ask this grand question, like of all of those two things, which is more critical? Is it genetics or is it lifestyle?
Well, I guess
I've stumped the doctor.
The problem is they're all
you can't
interwoven,
disentangle.
So it's hard
to
take them all apart. But I guess if I had to say, I'd say probably a lot of it is lifestyle. The other thing is, you know, we always talk about footwear, what people put on their feet. I think that has a big factor as well. Mm-hmm. The work conditions that people have to put up with also. And I think basically the fact that the population is getting heavier and heavier.
And
that's an issue also.
That's one thing that I thought it would be natural to ask about. I know people are tired of hearing that fact, but mm-hmm. but we are told that a lot of Americans are heavier than is good for them. They're heavier than their healthy body weight. So you would think that if you were going to have foot issues or you were maybe prone to them, that's going to be a contributing factor.
Sure. You can surely push you over the edge if you have a situation where you have the mechanics of your foot or structure of the foot isn't the most optimum, and now you go ahead and add this degree of repetitive stress to it. And then that can be a factor.
Yeah. One of the things that I think I mentioned it in my – the thing that I wrote to get people to know this, what we're going to be talking about, is that, in fact, an awful lot – your feet – an awful lot of weight, an awful lot of pressure comes from the feet simply just by walking. And that
sure.
in running, if you do something like that, mm-hmm. that it's even just that much more.
True. You know, you talk about, let's say, three times body weight on those – that particular limb that accepts all the weight when you're running. That's a tremendous amount of force. You can imagine if somebody weighs 300 pounds. You're talking about 900 pounds of force on that poor little foot, and sometimes it can kind of give way, mm-hmm. especially when all the soft tissue structures, muscles, tendons, ligaments are trying to go ahead and maintain the proper optimum position for it to be in. They get strained over mm-hmm. time.
Well, I suppose we could talk about shoes. There certainly are an awful lot of shoes on the market. I mean, I don't know if there are more shoes on the market today mm-hmm. than ever have been, but certainly you go into shoe stores, particularly those where they have athletic footwear, just running shoes alone, there are lots and lots of shoes.
True.
And I'm sure that there are many brands that say that they've thought a lot about how their shoes are structured mm-hmm. so that they will work well for you in, you know, whatever application that is, whether that's just walking or whether it's running or whether it's something more demanding. When people go and look at shoes, what should they be thinking about?
The biggest thing is fit. That's one of the things that people, they tend not to think about. And that's one of the things that we don't have a situation where people measure their feet anymore in a lot of stores. No one goes to a store and actually sits down and says, you know, they ask you, what size do you wear? And mm-hmm. you say, well, I wear a size 8. And so they can bring size 8s out. They don't measure the person to see if their shoe size has changed over time. For some reason, people think that their foot wouldn't change over time. They didn't look in the mirror. Obviously, things have changed some over yeah. the past few years, and exactly that can happen. Gravity can affect the structure of the foot, and as more and more time and weight is placed on it, the foot tends to get longer and wider as we get older, and the shoe size will change. So I think the biggest problem is people don't fit shoes anymore. No one measures them, so now they're in something that doesn't fit properly, and so all sorts of things happen as a result of that. The other is that just like, if you go into a store, buy a shirt or a pair of pants, you know, there's a lot of people of different sizes, shapes, et cetera, and the demands that are placed on that foot, depending on what type of activity they want to do, should be custom made to that particular type of footwear. We do see that in athletic shoes pretty well, where there is specific types of shoes that are designed for specific activity. But now, all of a sudden, sometimes we get situations where, because the shoes are being manufactured or designed to limit certain abnormal motions in the foot, there's some motion control shoes that prevent someone from pronating or flattening their foot out. We get people who are wearing particular shoes that they think are supposed to be good for them, and they're actually over-controlling them in some cases. So it's difficult to have situations where you have to have somebody who's pretty good at assessing what the person who comes in, their customer, wants as far as what their activities are, assessing what their needs are, and putting them in the right shoe. And sometimes that's a difficult thing to do as well.
Yeah. So it sounds, we don't want to obviously get into recommending particular places, but mm-hmm. it sounds as if you would say, if you can, go to some place where they will, first of all, they will measure your foot.
Right.
They won't just ask you.
And they should measure your feet. Which
and
would
you measure both? Because obviously they're not both going to be the same size. Is it generally common that in fact one they're going to be two different sizes?
We're not very symmetric. You know, you know one ear is lower than the other. You know, I mean, it's all this other. So why we think the both feet would be the exact same size? Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're not. But you have to go ahead and at least assess that and fit the largest foot.
So that would be my next question. That's what you do, is you fit whatever the largest one in.
And the other thing is width of shoes. Obviously, some people have very narrow feet. Some people have very wide feet. Some people have feet that are kind of pointed. Other people have what we call Fred Flintstone feet, and they're very square. And so, you know, you're trying to find something that's going to go ahead, and the shape of the toe box of the shoe and the width of the shoe is going to match what you're trying to cover. So that's something that has to be looked at as well.
I'm sure that probably there are some brands of shoes that don't come in a wide variety of widths. That is, maybe they come narrow, medium, and wide.
Right.
And although that there are some, and they assign a letter to the width of your foot. So it's like A, B, C, D, E.
Right.
Some manufacturers actually do make them in varying widths so that you can buy 9E.
True.
If that's it, but then there are some cases where you just have to make a choice and get whatever is close. Would you say that if you really can, look for a shoe that does have a wide range of widths? Is that
only
really critical?
Well, only if you need it. You know, if you're in a situation where you have a foot size that, let's say, it's a C or a D, it's kind of the generic width of foot, and then certainly you can get by with going ahead and wearing a shoe that will fit in that particular range. Obviously, the manufacturers, you know, you look at their reasons for doing that, and you can imagine the inventory that someone would have to carry and the amount of product that someone would have to go ahead and manufacture in a particular line to satisfy all those particular widths and shapes of shoes. And that's one of the reasons why we've lost that over time. That used to be the combination lats, where you could get the width of the heel and the width of the toe box and the forefoot to be different. And that's a big issue with especially women with foot deformities, where they'll have bunion deformities, things of that nature, and a real narrow heel. So they have a really wide forefoot, real narrow heel. They get a shoe that fits the width in the forefoot, and it can't stay on the foot because the heel is so wide. Mm-hmm. So those are issues that's pretty much gone. Nobody very few shoe manufacturers will go ahead and make combination last to go ahead and allow them to have the shoe that fits properly.
Well, and even if you go from one brand to another, if we got 10 pair of shoes and we said give us a 9 medium in every one, and then we looked at those shoes, we looked at their shape and their size, would they in fact be all the same?
Would be nice if that was the case, but no, they're not. The last can be different. There's not a lot of standardization in the way they're made. So yes, that's a problem. That's why you have to rely on someone who has some degree of expertise in regards to taking a look at somebody's foot and then knowing what's in their stock that's going to go ahead and help.
Yeah. We have one caller, I think, here ready to go. And certainly other folks can call in. If you have questions about feet, it could be questions about shoes, but it could also be questions about feet. You give us a call. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have a caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I have plantar fasciitis, or however that's pronounced, and I'm curious about shoes with good arch support, especially tennis shoes with good arch support.
What you're talking about is it's called plantar fasciitis.
Plantar.
And it's plantar, meaning the bottom surface of the foot. And there's some structures in the bottom of the foot that can become strained as a result of a number of different things. One is overuse, a particular sudden injury, people jumping off a height and landing on their foot or pushing off of something. We see it in basketball players where they go ahead and get a rebound and they push off their foot and run down the court and they can partially tear the plantar fascia. And in other cases, you can just have a situation where you do have a structure of the foot that tends to roll in and flatten out, putting excessive strain on that particular structure, and just gets fatigued over time.
Yeah, I enjoy walking.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be. And there's certain stretching exercises I do
to
try and alleviate it. But is there anything, I guess while we're talking about this, as opposed to shoes, is massage or anything that can be done?
I think the first thing to do, as you said, to trying to get a shoe that will go ahead and provide your foot with some decent support and control.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you can find a shoe that will do that, and that's when we're talking about those motion control shoes.
Right.
Other times you have to do some supplemental support inside the shoe.
Right.
There are some nice ones that are available. Power Step makes a nice support that you can fit in the shoe. Superfeet is another one. These are some over-the-counter generic ones that work well for people who need a little bit more control. And at the same token, when you talked about massage, I do like to use deep massage in some of these areas to go ahead and stimulate the healing and increase in circulation to those particular structures as well.
Okay. Are there any? Do you know enough about tennis shoes to recommend brands or models or anything?
I don't like to do that, and the reason is because I can't see your foot. Because there's some shoes that you know in the same brand, they will make lots of different types of shoes and different models of shoes to match exactly what foot type that you have and you need. So me telling you a particular brand, you go into the store and we said, boy, you know, that doctor recommended that, and the guy was looking and he said, boy, that's not going to work here at all. So you do have to go ahead and rely on somebody to go ahead and take a look and see.
So I should actually have you or one of your peers, look at my feet.
Well, not necessarily. You can just talk to some other folks and who do they go to in terms of shoe stores and where they do a nice job in terms of fitting, and you can rely on their expertise as well.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll talk next with someone in Vermilion County, and this is our toll-free line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sort of complicated thing. I wear an orthotic, which was made for my foot probably more than 10 years ago because I had a bunion that was starting to make my foot hurt, and I have no foot complaints. It's holding the bones or whatever in position very well. But I have always been very hard on the outer corners of my heels of my shoes. And sometimes when I get a new pair of shoes, I'll go to the shoemaker and have some sort of reinforcement taps put on the outer corners.
Right.
Is there anything that I should be concerned about this, or is this just the way I wear things? Is there anything else about being so hard, wearing out the heels of a shoe within a month, you know?
Well, you know, it has to do with a lot of things in terms of, first of all, normal wear on the heel of the shoe should be off-center, and it should be kind of on the just on the out back corner of the shoe. Not supposed to be, people think it's supposed to be right on the back and straight in the middle of the heel. It's not. You're supposed to be a little externally rotated when you go ahead and come down on the heel. So that's, a lot of times, it's normal wear. Now, when you think about wear, it's one of those situations where it's really determined by the abrasion resistance of the material that that's the heels of the shoe is made out of. So you could be in a situation where the material itself just doesn't hold up well because of that. And that's when you said you can go to they can put some other more abrasion-resistant material onto the shoe to go ahead and help with that. And that's all well and good as long as the heel itself has enough cushion so that we don't have a situation where you put that real hard material on and now you lose the shock absorption capability of the shoe. So that's not necessarily, you know, a bad thing.
So it doesn't mean that the orthotic is not right.
I would think not. The only thing that you could see, though, is that, you know, the orthotic being 10 years old, it depends on what it's made out of. Most of the time, the orthotics of that vintage are a heat-molded plastic, either polypropylene, polyethylene, and that material over time will always want to revert back to the shape it was in when it was manufactured, which was a flat sheet. So sometimes it will go ahead and change its shape to some degree. And probably one that's 10 years old, it might be worthwhile to have somebody take a look at it to see if the normal correction is still in the support and that hasn't gone ahead and worn out, causing you to go ahead and be in a little overcorrected position, and just to see if the orthotic is still proper in terms of its control.
Okay, but the fact that I'm wearing at the outer corners of my heels, and it should be in the center.
No, it shouldn't be in the center. It should be on the outer corners.
Oh, it should be.
Right.
Oh, I misunderstood. All right,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right,
thanks for the call. Others, again, are welcome to call. If you have questions about feet and foot issues, our guest is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. But let's talk a little bit about the arch. Because I think that somehow people have this idea that a certain kind of arch or having an arch is healthy in the way your foot is supposed to be, and certainly it is different from one person to the next. Does having a low arch does that necessarily mean that there's some kind of problem, or is that just the way your foot is?
Well, it depends. Yeah, the situation where if somebody does have a, you know, just their normal bony architecture is one that the arch isn't quite as high. And the mechanics of the foot and how it functions is reasonably normal, then no, that's not a problem. So a lot of it is based on the symptoms that a patient has. If somebody has a foot that's a little flat as far as the arch is concerned, any activity that they do throughout the course of the day, they have no symptoms, I don't go ahead and recommend, oh, my God, we've got to treat you with a support because your arch is lower than it should be. So, no, that's not necessarily true.
Okay. Well, then I'm thinking in terms of shoes, there can be a difference, at least from my experience, in how you feel it from anything from, you know, in the old days, the kind of gym shoes that we used to wear, like the Converse All-Star,
yes.
It's just flat as a board.
True.
It's just a flat piece of rubber. And then there are a lot of shoes where, and I think particularly it's true of athletic shoes and running shoes, where you put them on and you feel like there's the arch that's built into the shoe is enormous, like there's a hill in there. So there's
and that's why the manufacturer try to go ahead and take the person who has a more high arch foot and give them an option of, oh, here's a shoe that they can use that will go ahead and provide a little bit more support in those particular areas. So yes, it's true that, you know, again, you got to kind of match as far as what shoe would feel relatively comfortable. But you're right, as far as those old Chuck Taylors, boy, they're...
Yeah, there's nothing. It's just flat. Oh, no. It's just a flat piece of rubber in there. And I don't know is that necessarily, you know, people wear those shoes now just because they like the way that they look.
Right.
Is that a problem?
I'd certainly like to have a shoe that have a little bit more arch and support to them. You know, it's not that the fact that it doesn't have any arch. It's more the fact that they don't have those other things that you're looking for in shoes. Which is flexibility and stiffness in the same shoe, meaning that it's flexible where the foot bends at the metatarsal heads and behind the toes, as well as having some structural or torsional rigidity so it doesn't twist as much, and having some stability as far as the heel counter to hold the foot in a good position. You take a look at the technical running shoes or the good shoes, and you can see the difference in how these shoes are designed, and that they give you all those particular qualities. And then you take a look at that Converse shoe that was made when no one thought about the biomechanics of the foot, let alone how to control it inside of a shoe, and it has none of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing I don't like about those particular shoes, more than just the fact that they don't have much of an arch in them.
Yeah, all right. Caller here in McLean County, line number one. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes.
Okay, good. My question is, how about finding some sandal-type stuff to wear, footwear to have with some cushion on it? Because I know I wear orthotics, and I have to have extra layer of cushion on top of it.
Okay.
But I wear Birkenstocks, and I know they've made my calluses much worse, and also I have neuroma, and it aggravates that, too.
Would the Birkenstocks aggravate those things?
Well, yeah, it aggravates the neuroma, yes.
Okay. Well, there are options. There are certain shoes and sandal type of shoes. If you say you have an orthotic that you might wear, that you can go ahead and use, where the shoe itself or the sandal itself comes with a removable footbed. You remove that footbed and then place the orthotic in, and so that you can get the custom control of the orthosis and also have the advantage of wearing a sandal at the same time. There's Finn Comfort is one of the manufacturers that does that. Birkenstock does have some of their sandals that have a removable footbed that you can do that too as well. Another sandal, it's called the Bite, BITE. That's another sandal where you can have a removable liner and put a custom orthotic in. So there's a number of options if the patient's really comfortable in the orthotic and they need some added control and cushion at the same time. Those are some of the options that you can
I was
use.
Thinking about even looking for something that doesn't have, not what you have to use. Like Birkenstocks, when I wear them, I don't necessarily need my...
Correct.
I don't even need my orthotics. I was thinking I don't have to keep switching and changing, and that's been the problem.
Well, the other thing you can look at it, like Birkenstock actually makes a padded footbed. Mm-hmm. So that's one that does have more cushion to it.
Yeah, I've tried them, and they're not very padded to me.
Right. Well, then it sounds like it is one of those things where some of the other padded ones, Keen and Merrill, those some of the other ones that might be another possibility.
Keen,
you're right. KEEN is another.
And Merrill.
Right. Some of those other ones that may be something you could try.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And again, to another caller here, someone here in Champaign County, line two. Hello.
Well, hi, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
I have a general question. I have I would not consider myself to have an overly tall arch. It's probably smaller, but if I don't wear supports in my shoes, I start gaining knee pain. But what my question was is when I select arch supports for my shoes, should I select something that's a little bit taller than what my foot is, but still comfortable in order to maybe train my arch to be higher? Or do you just fit something that just fits the exact contour of what your foot is without any weight distributed on it?
I guess it would probably be which one feels most comfortable. And in terms of your particular case, you're talking about knee pain. Certainly an excessively flattened or pronated foot can go ahead and aggravate the structures in the knee. So that would be one of the things that you could go ahead and use as your criteria for or what would be best in terms of height of arch to something that would prevent your foot from rolling in and to go ahead and give you more comfort that way.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Thank you very much for your help.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Well, we're at our midpoint here. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Does it matter if you have a lot of different shoes and that every day you're wearing a different pair? Does that pose any kind of issue, particularly if you would say, well, my feet are okay and I wouldn't complain of having foot problems?
That would be fine.
Doesn't really matter.
No.
Yeah. Are there some cases where that for some people that is indeed an issue, that if they have particular kinds of problems, I suppose particularly if they wear orthotics, that you would say, you know, you got to, if this is what works for your foot, you've got to stay with that. You can't be doing something different every day.
Exactly. Women's shoes, that's the nightmare, because you're trying to go ahead and especially if you make an orthotic that really controls the foot really well. Mm-hmm. My concern has to be with how much contact area I have with the foot and the orthotic, and boy, it fits the foot great, controls it very well, and now the patient says, well, I can't get in my shoes. Well, now I have a situation where now I have to treat their shoes, not their feet, and they say, well, I'm not going to wear that.
Yeah.
So then I have to say, well, geez, you know, I have to go ahead and get the control. So that means you're very limited in the shoes that you can wear. And this is it's a problem. I'm not unsympathetic about the plight of that. But it is a situation where I have to go ahead and rely on the shoe to hold the orthotic correctly, to go ahead and get good control. And with men's shoes, it's never an issue.
Yeah.
Well,
with women's
shoes, it's a big problem.
I'm sure it was you that one time we were talking about shoes and you said something to the effect of, well, probably the best shoe in terms of how it's going to work with your foot is a shoe that's shaped like a foot.
That's right.
And for guys, you know, we're not quite as picky about what our shoes look like. Mm-hmm. But in women now, maybe there are not that many women who are going to want to wear a shoe that looks like a foot.
True.
And so I'm sure that you get into a lot more issues of people who have problems that are related to the shoes that they wear. And, you know, maybe the kind of choices that they are going to have are not necessarily going to be the ones that they would really like to have.
True, true. But then they just have to kind of understand that. And if that's the choice they make, then sometimes it's a difficult choice. Now, in situations where someone has some specific orthopedic deformities of the foot, hammer toes, bunions, those particular type of things, and then there are other options in regards to trying to treat these particular situations, that's usually a surgical option. In terms of going ahead, and if they have these deformities, you can treat them from the shoe side or the bone side in regards to trying to remedy the deformity by physically going in there and repairing the deformity. So that's an option for a lot of people that they choose to do versus trying to do the other. And that's certainly a reasonable choice as well.
Mm. All right. Let's talk with someone in Savoy here, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have two real quick questions. One, I wear orthotics. I was prescribed the orthotics before I got pregnant, had the baby, and now I notice that my calves really, really sore. And I'm wondering whether it's possible that my orthotics have changed because of the pregnancy.
Most likely the orthotics are the same and you have changed as a result of the pregnancy.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So yes, it can happen. And
okay.
So that's something that then would have to be kind of reassessed.
And then the second question I have is, if I've been wearing my shoes with orthotics and I'm a woman and therefore I've got like very limited selection of shoes I can wear, so I wear the same shoes pretty much every day, how fast do they wear out? You know, I've been wearing these same shoes for over a year now. Do I need to be getting new shoes to keep the support there, or does it not matter?
That's usually the first thing we do when someone has had that good luck with an orthotic in the past and then they tell me that they have not changed their shoes in, let's say, over a year, then the first thing to do would be to change the shoe and see if now that the orthotic still works well in a shoe that gives us a little bit more stability. You got to remember when you have the manufacturer and the design of the orthotic is very specific in terms of how many degrees of correction there are, and that assumes that when the patient is walking that the orthotic is basically parallel to the ground. As you start to get some significant wear of the outsole of the shoe, then all of a sudden now there's an angular change, and so that when you stand, now the orthotic is in parallel to the ground. Maybe it's tilted one way or another. So then it's actually changed the degree of correction. So you would need to go ahead and either maintain the shoes in terms of making sure that the wear is on the heels is repaired, or you have to get another shoe to make sure that it's still working well with the orthotic.
Okay, so would you change out the shoe first and then worry about changing out the orthotics? Or
definitely.
See whether that's what the problem is?
Rather change the shoe first. That's a simple thing for you to do, and then you'll find out right away whether your symptoms persist, and if that's the case, then you have to take a look at the orthotic.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. The next caller is in Crete on our toll-free line. Line 4, hello.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. One in general terms, would it be better to wear a loafer or a tie-down type shoe?
Definitely a tie shoe. I'm not a real fan of loafers. It's not so bad in men. Most of the time, the loafers are such that they come up high enough on the foot so that, that you don't have to struggle with trying to keep the shoe on. But if, when you think about it, you'd like a shoe that is nice, firmly attached to the foot, so you don't have to go ahead and work so hard to, especially with the toes, to try to hold that shoe on your foot, and allows the toes to relax and function the way they're supposed to. So I'm much more of a fan of the tie shoe versus slip-on shoe.
And the second one is when I go out in the wintertime, very often my feet become very cold. I could wear two pair of socks, three pair of socks,
mm-hmm.
and I come in and I have to go to the tub and one put some warm water on my toes. Is that Raynaud's disease, or is that circulation problem, or is that just I should have more insulation in my boots?
Well, that's hard to say. Raynaud's disease is something that's a spasm of the vasculature, both the venous side and the arterial side. So most of the time, Raynaud's will affect the toes and the fingers, and it's one of those things that where the digits change colors. They'll go from white to purple to bright red. So if you have that particular type of thing, then it'd be worthwhile to have somebody look at them and see if that is the case. If you have feet that normally tend to perspire some, that could be a culprit as well in terms of losing the insulation quality of the sock and even the shoe as a result of being out. The other is if your circulation is compromised, but you would know that basically by if you're out walking and you have a tendency to be able to walk a particular distance and you get cramping in your feet and legs and have to stop and rest, and then it gets better and then you can walk again and then the cramping is back, then you know that's a sign of decreased in arterial circulation, and then would have to be looked at. But the biggest thing as far as the cold feet in this particular type of weather is the fact that you have to keep them dry. And, you know, wearing a good sock that has some wicking ability to go ahead and take the water away from the skin and keeping the skin dry with some powder is always beneficial.
Do you believe in changing shoes on a yearly basis?
Definitely yearly. And it's also if somebody has a tendency to perspire, they should change them daily, because it takes at least 24 hours for a shoe to dry out that's been exposed to perspiration all day. It's been, say it's about a third of a cup of water or fluid can be expressed by the foot each day, and you can imagine saying, taking your shoe and putting a third of a cup of water in there and saying, you know, I mean, it's got to dry out. So you go ahead and give it some time. So you go ahead and have two pair of shoes and you rotate them, and they'll last a lot longer. Number one, they'll keep your feet a lot drier.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. There are some manufacturers, and two that I think of right offhand are Birkenstocks and the Finns, where they have models that mm-hmm. don't have a strap that goes around the back of mm-hmm. your foot, and that the way you keep it on is that they're structured so that you're supposed to kind of grip it with your toes, and that's mm-hmm. the way that you keep the shoe on.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're, as far as you're concerned, you would not recommend people.
Well, it's not, again, it's, you know, that's not, you can't say a hard and fast rule. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, there are some situations where, you know, the Birkenstocks are a little different too because of the design of the footbed. You know, they give you something to grip mm-hmm. on versus a shoe that doesn't have anything on the inside. So not all, you know, I wouldn't say that all the Birkenstocks should use with the strap in the back. I wear Birkenstocks and I have the style that doesn't have the strap in the mm-hmm. back. So. That's not that much of a problem. But I think that it's like everything, moderation. You know, if you're able to go ahead and use different footwear, I think it's always best for just the average everyday stuff as far as a tie shoe, strap and buckle, something like that, to go ahead and hold the foot on the shoe onto the foot so that you have a minimum amount of gripping so that you can go ahead and not wear out all those poor structures that are trying to keep the toes in their normal position.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic. He's a physician who specializes in the foot and the ankle. So if you have foot issues, give us a call. He'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Champaign County is up next, line one. Hello?
Hi, Finn Comfort testimonial here. I love mine. I should probably have replaced them a while back, and I do have the strap in the back. But I have a long-time problem with ankle pain. I did a bad sprain and never really fully recovered. And I'm getting, apparently, the latest recourse is to, there's a new kind of leather brace. It's being fabricated for me. Hopefully the HML will pay for it. I'm just wondering if I have to just really give up my fins and go to some kind of more laced high top or at least somewhat higher top to accommodate this. I think I can't remember the brand name of this new brace, but you're probably familiar with it.
Yeah, it's either it sounds like an ankle gauntlet brace or Arizona brace or something like that.
No, neither of those ring a bell. But okay. I've had the gauntlet type. That's Swede.
The Swedo or the
Swedo, yeah.
This is a custom
gears, yeah.
This is the custom made brace, or
this will be custom made. Yeah, okay. They do. They've done a
yeah. There's lots of different types of those braces, and some of them, it's a real nightmare for shoe fit, because you can imagine, boy, it's the brace has a particular amount of volume, and then you're
right.
Trying to find a shoe to go along with it. Yeah, it is a problem. But yes, it's usually you have to have footwear that's going to go ahead and be able to incorporate or fit the brace in it, and then go ahead and kind of meld the foot to the brace and the shoe.
Just stop the torsional and, on the ankle. But so it seems likely to me, and I guess I should have realized this a long time ago, that I really do need more of a high top, and I have to.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because now when you go ahead and have the brace is going to provide the stability for the foot and ankle. So you don't. In fact, sometimes you can't use a high top with the braces. So it's just something else that is going to be just wide enough to be able to get your foot in as well as the brace.
Well, what about the strap in the back, Finn Comfort? Do you think that would match it enough to? I mean, these are all questions I'll be asking my podiatrist. I'm getting my second opinion here.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where you just trial and error. You'd have to try it and see. But I would think that you really need something to go ahead and make sure that the brace doesn't move inside the shoe.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Urbana next, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Thank you, doctor, for the program. And I just wanted to add to some of the solutions that you have for a foot problem that, instead of the changing the shoes and conventional items that we use, we could use some of the non-conventional medicine like yoga. Mm-hmm. And I just want to hang up and listen to doctor.
True. I think, it's one of those situations where anything that can revolve around improving muscle strength, flexibility, proprioception, balance, all of these things are very beneficial to just the normal mechanics of the foot, as well as which extends to the entire body. So I'm a big fan of those particular type of things to go ahead and do. So yes, I think those are important as well. The problem is if I see patients and I recommend those things, a lot of times, I have to be realistic in terms of what they'll, how compliant they'll be for those particular type of things as well. But yes, if somebody has that and interest and wants to pursue it, I think that would be fine.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next caller, and this would be someone in Chicago and on line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I broke my heel bone in my foot, and I went to an orthopedic surgeon, and I was wondering, did I make the right decision, or should I have gone to a podiatrist?
Obviously, the orthopedists do an excellent job as far as repair of fractures as well. They have to open it up and pin it or put screws in there, et cetera?
Well, he didn't break it. He never did operate. He just put my foot in a cast for 3 weeks.
Okay. Well, it depends on where the break is. Obviously, if it involves the joint beneath beneath the ankle joint, which is the subtalar joint, sometimes it has to be repaired. But, I don't, it's something that orthopedists and podiatrists both treat a lot of similar problems. And as long as the person's competent, I'm sure you've got
right,
a good treatment.
Right, but I mean, do podiatrists also treat broken bones?
Oh, sure.
Feet?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I could have gone either one, and it wouldn't have made a big difference.
Yes, you could.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
We'll go over to Rentoul for the next caller. Line one. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. A couple of comments and a question. I know I talked a little about those clogs 42 years ago when I lived in Europe. I even noticed Danish seamen working on boats wearing those wood clogs. So mm-hmm. I bought a pair and in Copenhagen, and I could never get them to wear. I couldn't wear them. And I noticed that nurses are wearing them these days, and it must be some fad thing. But going back to walking shoes, I believe in giving 2 or 3 days between shoes, air them out. But now I'm in the process, I want to get some new walking shoes. I go back and look at a pair of Rockport Pro Walkers, and they're horrible. They're made in China. They're not made in Hungary like the pair I have.
Yeah.
And I Clark's Air Walkers, the soles are made out of rubber compound that can't be... And they can't be fixed, and I'm not the type that wants to wear athletic shoes for walking, you know, casual use.
Right.
Where can I go to, and what can I look for? It just seems that the only thing I have left, it appears, is something that's grossly way out of my price range at this stage in life. What can I do?
Boy,
I'll just hang up.
Okay, it's a real problem. I agree with you that. The quality of some of the shoes has really gone down. The manufacturers have changed their techniques of and design of some of the shoes. It's really frustrating for myself as far as I find a particular shoe that I like, I'll recommend it to patients, and then the manufacturer will change everything about the shoe, and then that's something I can't recommend anymore. It is a difficult situation. Unfortunately, a lot of times you get what you pay for, and that is it is difficult to find a good shoe that is economical. And the best shoes, the most research that's done on shoes is, unfortunately, as far as your case, is the fact that it is in an athletic shoe. So if you don't like the look of an athletic shoe, you're kind of stuck in having to go ahead and maybe pay a little bit more for some of the other shoes. SAS makes a real nice shoe for general shoe in terms of rigidity, support, et cetera. But that's the same my complaint. They're not an inexpensive shoe, and yes, the soles wear, and then you have a shoe that has a worn sole and a perfectly good upper, and then what are you going to do? You have to throw them out and get another pair of shoes. So I wish that they would go back to some ability to go ahead and change and repair the soles, but obviously that's not something a manufacturer wants to do, but they want to sell shoes. They don't want to have something that you can go ahead and wear for a longer period of time. So it's a dilemma.
Yeah, okay. We'll try and help with some other questions here. We have about 5 minutes left with Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carle Clinic in Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. A couple of years ago, I bought a new pair of boots for winter wear,
mm-hmm.
and I went with something that was kind of tall, because I got tired of stepping into snowbanks and getting snow on my shoes, and found, though, that I felt like Frankenstein, because they wouldn't allow my ankles to move, that mm-hmm. they were holding my ankles so stiff, and that they didn't give me much flexibility in the foot.
True. Like wearing a ski boot.
Yes, exactly. It was right. Exactly like that. And they were they were indeed warm and waterproof.
Yeah.
And then snow did not get in them. But they were not all that comfortable to walk in, and they were impossible to drive in. Is ankle – what do you do about a situation like that? And is ankle flexibility – the ability to have your ankle move, is that really important?
Boy, you know, and that actually varies mm-hmm. from person to person. You know, that's one of those interesting things that we always talk about. Variability in biologic structures, and as far as the human body is concerned, there's a considerable variability in the shape of ankle joints and joints of the foot. It's really odd compared to the rest of the body in general. So some people have ankle joints that have a rather simple range of motion, and others have a tremendously variable range of motion, and it varies in from person to person. So if somebody who has a particular simple range of motion in their ankle, and they just dorsiflexion, plantar flexion is the important thing, that particular boot is probably reasonably flexible in that particular plane, and you don't notice it. But other people who have to rely upon more rotational range of motion at the ankle may find it a bit very stiff. So usually those boots, though, they're not as stiff as in the ankle as they are in the sole. So what you might have lost was the ability to go ahead and just bend the foot. And if you lose that, now the body will go ahead and say, well, now I have to compensate that at the next joint up and the next joint up. And now, oh, I can't even do that at the ankle. And now, as I said, again, the example of a ski boot where, geez, you feel very unstable because you can't go ahead and balance yourself because you don't have the range of motion there.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Maybe in part it was a break-in issue. You know, maybe
true,
if I wore them a lot more, it might have been different. But that was certainly my experience. We have a couple more people here. We'll try to get them both. First is Champagne in line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My name is Ram. I'm calling from Champagne.
Yes.
I have a special problem. I don't know whether a podiatrist would be the best person to help here. My wife, she used to have a pretty chronic sciatic nerve problems on the left feet, on the left foot. And then she's now 6 months pregnant, and now her sciatic pain has moved from the left foot to the right foot. Every time we tell the doctor, normally we get someone saying that it's normal during pregnancy, but other than that, and some occasional help from yoga, we've not had any permanent solution. So I just thought I'll hang up right now, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on any long-term solution to such sciatic nerve problems. Thank you.
Most of the time, obviously the sciatic nerve problem is, well, during pregnancy, that's one thing. If she had it before she was pregnant, that's another. There's lots of different causes for that, and it certainly should be evaluated. I wouldn't think that if somebody comes into my office and complains about sciatic nerve pain, I do not treat that particular problem. I refer them to either at Carl. It's nice we have the spine center and the physical medicine doctors that go ahead and evaluate those particular problems for us. And very seldom is it related to the foot. Sometimes it is, but most of the time it's not. So that's something that we go ahead and have them thoroughly evaluated, and if they feel as though there's nothing there, then we look at things as simple as asymmetric shape of the foot, function of the foot. Do we have a limb length inequality that's going ahead and causing problems with tilt of the pelvis, irritation to the musculature where the sciatic nerve goes through the sciatic notch and then that causes inflammation in that particular area, given those particular type of symptoms. So sometimes that's the case, but we only do that after thorough evaluation by someone else.
Yeah. So I guess, though, it is the case that you could have pain other parts in your body, knee pain, hip pain, for example, that could really be about the foot.
True. And we always talk about, you know, the lower extremity starts at the first lumbar vertebra. You know, so everything is a chain. Mm-hmm. So when something goes wrong as far as the foot's concerned, it can affect the low back, and also if somebody has a problem with the low back, it can be referred to the foot. I have plenty of patients who come in complaining about arch pain at night, and so, boy, you know, well, it's actually a disc that's putting pressure on a nerve that goes down to the foot, mm-hmm. and it's not the opposite way around. So that's why those things have to be evaluated.
Let's see if we can get one more caller here. Chicago, line four.
What's your view on fallen arches lately? Is there any remedy or help? And secondly, quickly, do you think reflexology has merit in relieving certain conditions?
As far as reflexology is concerned, that's one of those things where a lot of times it's related to, obviously, Eastern medicine, which has been around for thousands and thousands of years. I think that we'd be remiss at saying that only Western medicine, which hasn't been around half that amount of time, has any benefit. So whether I would go ahead and say if someone comes in with a gallbladder attack and we're going to go ahead and treat that with manipulation of the and massage of the bottom of the foot versus other care, I don't know about, or same thing with hypertension. So that's something that's basically up to the person. But
yeah, thank you.
I think it has some benefit, and other times it doesn't.
And again, we did talk a little bit earlier about arches.
Yeah, as far as the arch height and things like that, it's again, it's extremely variable.
Yeah. Well, we're just about the point we have to finish up. Just in terms of general advice, we've talked about a number of things. One is that shouldn't wear the same pair of shoes every day. You want to give them a chance to dry out because a lot of moisture comes off your feet. Think about your socks. You want to have good socks that will wick the moisture away. If you can, go to buy your shoes someplace where they'll actually measure your feet and try to fit them.
Even though you think you know your size.
And that is over time. If forever you've been a 9D, that doesn't mean if forever you're going to be.
That means that 90. Most likely you're not in the right shoe size.
All right. Anything else in terms of sort of general advice?
I don't know. I mean, just try not to ignore them as much. You know, that's one of the things that people, how long have you had this particular problem with your foot? 6 months to a year. And what have you done for it? Nothing. You know, so really kind of listen to your body. And if you're having these particular problems, sometimes it's a lot easier to treat it early than late. Because it's one of those things also. It's difficult. I don't know why I chose feet in the first place. Sometimes I shake my head and because... How you can ever treat a foot problem when you can never rest it and let it heal? And we never are able to do that. If you hurt your shoulder, people say, okay, I'm going to go ahead. I won't do that thing that aggravates it. Mm-hmm. When the foot problem is there, they just walk out of the office and they're continuing to do the things that make it bad in the first place.
There, we'll leave it for this time around. With our thanks to our guest, Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carle Clinic in Urbana. We appreciate it.
Thank you.